Jema. So today we thought about continuing, of course, Collected Works of the Mother, Volume 13. So today we thought about Auroville. But there is just one letter which I thought we should read, which is part of the ashram, but applicable to Auroville, applicable everywhere actually. So there are one or two letters we'll read from the section on the ashram. And then we go to Auroville. And these are in very important reminders. It applies everywhere. For example, regarding the organizations, she says, I do not give position to the sadhaks. I give them work. And to all I give an equal opportunities. So there are people who are maybe in administration. They are meant to help in the administration. But it is that work which is important, not the position. In the sense that it's not like somebody is superior and somebody is inferior. So now I come to this particular letter, which I think is like a document she has left for all of us, both in the ashram, Auroville, any center, anywhere mothers work. So for those who may want to refer, this is on page 164 of volume 13. In human life, the cause of all difficulties, all discords, all moral sufferings is the presence in everyone of the ego with its desires, its likes and dislikes. Even in a disinterested work which consists in helping others, until one has learned to overcome the ego and its demands, until one can force it to keep calm and quiet in one corner, the ego reacts to everything that displeases it, starts an inner storm that rises to the surface and spoils all the work. And one can see that it's not just about, even in a work given by the mother, in a work where you're helping people, still there are personal reactions and they create a kind of slant within us, both with regard to perception and this is the distortion in creation which the mother speaks about. That if we like someone, we take a certain slant. If we dislike someone, there is another slant. So all preference is based on the ego understanding. The divine also seems to act according to preferences, but that is not based on likes and dislikes, but based on the work and the whole inner state. She says that those who are more sincere, they automatically get more work. So she says that. But otherwise, there is a slant. And these slants, due to desire and ego, distort the original will. The mother has explained that so many places. And as the original will, the impulsion gets distorted, there is conflict and chaos which begins. So the solution is to realign with the mother's will, to keep seeing inside what is it that the mother wants. We are too busy with what I want, what I like, what I don't like. So she says that this is the task. This work of overcoming the ego is long, slow and difficult, because ego wears 1,000 masks. And it's one of the most specious masks is that for mother I am doing it. For the sake of the divine I am doing it. Mother's work I am doing. And basically it's a play of the ego. So that's a mask. It demands constant alertness and sustained effort. So vigilance is required. This effort is easier for some and more difficult for others. So there are some who by nature are humble. Especially for bhakta it becomes very easy. Though sometimes the ego of the bhakta can also come. I am a special bhakta and I am very special to the divine. So this is a very interesting story of how ego can be annulled. There are two roots. So the story goes that once someone asked Sri Ramakrishna about overcoming ego. So just then Nag Mahashe, he entered and Nag Mahashe was one of the disciples, very, very full of love for Sri Ramakrishna. So he said, tell me who you are. So Nag Mahashe tells me, I am not even the dust of your feet. So Sri Ramakrishna smiled. Now that is one approach of overcoming. You are so humble, you become nothing. Divine is everything. And then Swami Vivekananda enters. So he asked, tell me about yourself. Who are you? So he stood erect for a moment. Then he says, I am the divine. Now both are approaches. One is by the intellectual mind you bypass completely and you discover that there is nothing else but the divine. But then that I is not about his small little personality. And the other is that you surrender, self-giving, which is the shorter way, of course. So this is the approach, but it takes long because it hides behind. Even this can come ego that, you know, I have surrendered myself, I have given myself. I have done so much, so many years I have lived in the ashram, so much work I have done, so many ways it can come. 1,000 masks it can wear. So she says it will take time and it's long, but then she reminds us, we are here in the ashram to do this work. So we thought we were doing, you know, dining room work and lecturing work and medical work and God knows what work. He said, this is the work. Together, with the help of Sri Aurobindo's knowledge and force, in an attempt to realize a community that is more harmonious, more united, and consequently much more effective in life. So to keep behind the ego, every time there is a reaction and a response to, okay, we say that if we do that, what happens to the other person who is very egoistic? Don't worry about that person. That's the divine's lookout, what he does with that person. You will progress. As the same thing comes everywhere, that if you know that story of Jugalda, he himself recounted that when he went to, he wanted to tell Amalkiran and Niruddha that, see, you are making too much noise in the ashram courtyard when you talk. But he asked the mother, and she says, if you tell them, they may progress. But if you don't tell them, you will progress. You see, there is, because it's like I must tell them, because they are, is the ashram atmosphere. Now see, there is somebody else who is given this work. It's that person's problem. He is going to be seen based on how sincere he is. So it's a very, you know, that's how the ashram has been designed. And it's something very interesting and beautiful. That's why here there is no authority. Sometimes it can be very troublesome. Many people said, what is it? There is no authority. And you can't do it with authority because authority implies the ego. And I think the story of Admiral Rutledge, who said, give me just 1 month and I'll straighten out everybody and everything. She said, take 3 months. And he came back and said, no. Nobody listens to anyone. Because it's meant to be like that. It may sound. It's very easy to create a neat organization simply by the pressure. I mean, I've been in the Air Force and I know how easy it can be. You have a set of rules. There is a man who imposes the rules and you better fall in line. And all of us. But here there is no rule. So no rule means now it is up to you. If you are sincere, you will progress. If you are not sincere, you are the one who will suffer. Means you have lost that opportunity, which I feel is the biggest thing, you know, to come here and then to lose the opportunity because you were just living the same old life as anywhere else. And then she says something very interesting because it almost becomes the document of the future. She is saying this in 1969. As we know, from 62 onwards, from 62, 61 late, but 62 onwards, mother did not come down. She stayed only in her room. And after her experience of 13th, 14th April 1962, she says, I am on the other side. It's like she had passed into the other realm and she was operating. So what she is saying has a much deeper meaning. She says, as long as I was, mark the words, as long as I was physically present among you all. She is physically present. People are going to her, taking from her you know. But she had started a new process. Just imagine. As long as I was physically present among you all, my presence was helping you to achieve this mastery over the ego. And so it was not necessary for me to speak to you about it individually very often. It's a very cryptic statement. She is physically present. Her consciousness is surely not limited to the room or the body. And yet she is saying that as long as I was physically present, my presence, physical presence was enough. So what is she speaking about? It's amazing. But anyway, it's a document of the future. Because if you see the ashram life, very simply it was organized around the mother. You wake up in the morning, it's balcony darshan. Then you have vegetable darshan. Then you have animal darshan. You have everything going on. Playground. There also people are running for mother's darshan. Everywhere, right till night, from morning to night, life is centered around the mother. Wherever there was a dispute or conflict, people went to the mother. And mother's word was taken as final. So after that, whatever you may feel momentarily like a reaction, then you say, no, no, mother has said this, that's the end of the story. Now we have to arrive at that. You know, it is very interesting, the leela of the divine unfolding. He sets a stamp, then he withdraws. Now this will keep on drawing people in that direction ultimately. That is enough because he has put his stamp, seal, left patterns in the subtle worlds. Those patterns will keep on imposing upon mankind. So there will be more and more people eventually who understand the need to overcome the ego. The leaders must always set the example. Oh, so she says, but now this effort must become the basis of each individual's existence, more especially for those of you who have a responsible position and have to take care of others. The leaders must always set the example. The leaders must always practice the virtues they demand from those who are in their care. So what should be the leaders, which today's time we may say maybe head of the departments, maybe people specifically given certain work. So what should be there? It's for them first. They must be understanding. Don't just dismiss people without listening to them, without giving them a hearing. Understand each one's situation, difficulty, challenges. It's human beings struggling through so many things. And just sometimes giving a patient hearing. And the best example for that, as far as I understand, is Amritdha. Anybody who went to him, even Pavitrada for that matter, he would give a hearing, patient hearing. Except once, because somebody would come every day and sit at a particular time and start complaining and grumbling. So one day, as soon as he came, Amrita got up, picked up his files and started going. So he asked him, when will you come back? He says, when you have gone, I'll come back. Even there was this sense of humor. And that's why when he left the body, everybody from the most common worker to everybody felt the loss, because he would deal with everyone like that. This is exactly how the mother would deal. So, understanding, patient, enduring, full of sympathy and warm and friendly goodwill. Not out of egoism to win friends for themselves. Not so that you can gather a kutri around and you know you get flatterers. No. So she says it should be a way. But out of generosity to be able to understand and help others. So she is giving us the qualities of the leaders in the ashram life and by default in Auroville. You have to be very understanding, very patient. You have to be compassionate. Each one is coming from a certain background and you have to take that into consideration. You can't bulldoze human beings into a set shape. It's just not done. So, to forget oneself, one's own likings and preferences is indispensable in order to be a true leader. Whole document is there. This should be, I think, Pranabdha used to once distribute that when you come to the ashram, there is an advice to the ashramites, to those who are coming. We have read that, volume 12, page 49. Then sometimes he would also give, you know, I don't believe in propaganda and all that. And sometimes I feel that this one should be distributed to everybody. This is so important, with that benevolence, with compassion. That is what I am asking of you now, so that you can face your responsibilities as you should. And then you will find that where you used to feel disorder and disunity, they have vanished, and harmony, peace and joy have taken their place. The onus is with the leaders. They have to set the example. And this is the example she is telling us. How beautiful this is. Because now she is going to say something. She is saying, I am no longer in with you all. I am no longer physically present. So this applies to here and now to all of us. So what is she saying? You know that I love you. She is not saying it just for the sake of saying. This is the basis, background, that mother loves us. This is the fundamental basis of all yoga and living here. And people often ask, why are you in the ashram institution, this, that? I don't know about all those complicated things. I know that the mother loves us, and this is the place where they have lived. Their stamp of memories are here, nothing else is required. People are what they are, they will be what they will be. How does it matter? It's their journey. But mother loves us. And quite naturally, when you love someone, you want to be where the person has been, or where you feel that memory stamp. So many times I feel, oh, this wall she must have touched, this road she has walked. Someone asked me once, why do people hand? They don't know that I also do that. So, you know, stand below the balcony and you... I said, you know, so millions of times, at least thousands of times, mother has come and been here. You know what kind of connection it makes, the very fact that you stand there even for a few moments. So intellectual ideas apart. So everywhere you get that sense that she has been here. She is here. Her memories are here. You go any place here in the ashram, there is no place where, you know, there are houses, one of the houses where one of the ladies used to live, Krishna Chakravarti, some of us may know her. So she used to tell me, you know, when mother would see from the balcony, my house is visible. That was the comfort, that, you know, mother has seen this house from. She had never come there, but she has seen the house. The houses where she has visited, houses where she has given the name. Where she has never come. One of those is where somebody asked that what name should we give it. And mother said, as you like it, all of you know. So the name of the whole building is as you like it. But it's so beautiful that, you know, mother uttered the name and that name is put there. As you like it is that. Many people have stayed there. Now they are redoing the building. Doesn't matter, but that's the name. So you know that I love you and that I am always with you to sustain you, help you and show you the way. Now when you read it with the background that she says I am no longer physically present, then this statement carries a very, very strong message. You know that I love you and that I am always with you to sustain you, help you and show you the way. So this I feel is the important document. Doesn't matter what outer situations are, they change. Life is full of all kinds of changes, but to live here, often I say that in every country you have a rules. You must know the rule. So it's not enough you have a visa. If you don't know the rules, you are in for trouble. You need to know. A simple thing, whether you should drive left hand or right hand drive, you need to know. You need to know that you are not supposed to stare at people. In India, we are fond of staring, you know. We look at people and we get very, oh God. We even pass comments, oh look at him, he must be that. And we are cool about it. You do this in America, you may be fine. I think I am right. You are not supposed to stare at people, you know, anywhere. Because it's considered offensive. It's the sensibility and you better respect it. Let alone pass comments because it will be taken very seriously. So every place has a rule. So what is the rule here? One rule here, Sri Aurobindo has said, always behave as if the mother is looking at you. Now this is the rule mother has given to us post 1973. And this we have to remember. And if we remember it, at least now I have good amount of 22 years of living here and 40 years of being associated. So I can say with clear certainty, if we follow this rule, life will be wonderful here. Rishabh Chand put it in very simple terms. He said, mother, when people come here, if they look at us, they will never want to stay here. But if they look at you, they will never want to go away from here. And that's what she is reminding us, that you know that I love you and that I am always with you to sustain you. All that is needed, sustain. Just imagine the word sustain. Sustain inwardly, outwardly. So we have to remember that she loves us. Connect with her. Help you and show you the way. An experience so clear of everyone who experiences it, just a delight. And this continues. This is going to continue forever. Because this is a statement she has made in those. She has even said that my love and consciousness will always be there. And very difficult for some of the old timers to understand it. Because they have seen the physical thing and they don't understand that mother is not only so much present, she is so tangibly present. Like, I've never physically seen the mother, but when I hear people that, you know, when mother was here, I just don't understand this statement at all. I actually don't understand. Because this not only thought didn't come, it's not true in experience, because you feel not only she is there, she sustains, she takes care of everything. In fact, more I feel, because you don't even have to write to her. you can just connect, you can speak out at the samadhi, you can look at the balcony, and she takes care in every possible way. So she is more available. This is what she spoke of Sri Aurobindo, and it's equally true of her, that they are much more available to all. But we have to connect. If you keep looking at human beings, their problems, then it's a different thing. So with this background, which is, as I said, everywhere, we have to remember it, we come to Auroville. So as we know, there is a little bit of background to it. So ashram is a concentrated place, the seed where the first experiment, because she had to see, they have to see whether humanity is even ready for this or not. And we know all that happened. We have spoken about it. But the yoga was not generalized for a long time. They didn't want centers to be opened. They didn't want to do any kind of advertisement. As such, Mother and Sri Aurobindo are not in favor of advertisement and propaganda. It's true, because those who are destined to come, they will have the call and they will come. They have their means to reach out through whatever means. Somebody reads a newspaper, somebody reads a book, reaches his hand. Somebody nowadays, like for example, hears something and people feel inwardly a call and they come. So, but it's not done with the spirit of getting people and advertising and drawing or attracting more devotees. No, that's never the way here. But after 56, she accepted the generalization of the yoga into mankind. She mentions that. She mentions about devotees who are outside and the larger ashram, 57. All this we have read at different points of time. That this is the larger ashram, this is the subtle ashram. There are people who are connected, who are not here physically. Because the ashram has, and she says it was needed if the ashram has to be viable. So it's a dangerous tendency sometimes to draw very sharp lines. Because that was needed at one point of time, it's no more needed now. So in 60, which is when we have the first anniversary of the supramental manifestation, she floats. Sri Aurobindo Society. Now people have all kinds of, you know, intellectual people are very difficult people, because they start, oh, somebody proposed and mother agreed. Does it make a difference? Everything in the ashram is somebody proposed. The whole physical education department is basically somebody proposed. The school, somebody proposed. Everything is somebody's proposed. She has inspired and then she has accepted. They never were in the habit of saying, oh, we have to build this place and, you know, you people will be the instrument. That's not a way. So somebody proposed has no meaning. She accepted. She chose to become the permanent president, and we know that Sri Aurobindo Society took shape. Was it to bring money? Was it to make? Both things were there. One was the money part, but also to make known. This is there in the document. To make known to the world, to the people, the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. So it was a two-way traffic that, well, you are giving something as a yajna, and in return, the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. This rest all is all human complications. So we can leave that aside. As part of that project, we see that from the society emerged Auroville. Because money had to be collected for a universal township. But the conception of Auroville started when Sri Aurobindo and the mother are here, and the mother speaks about it. In fact, it started when mother was a very young girl in at the age of 15 in France. So that's when she had this idea of a universal township, and that whole idea was there. And she says then she left it there and came here. And that's what Roger had caught, and he had come. And then subsequently now we see this idea is taking its shape in its own way. There are communities people are trying to build around the idea of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And okay, shortcomings and good things, that's not our to judge. But this is bound to happen because of the fact that there is this idea is now pressing upon earth. Commune living is anyways the future. Because if one has to go beyond the family, it has to be a commune. Commune is going to be the future anyways of mankind. But a Vedantic communism, that's the future. Maybe too much ahead, but that's how it is. So, then this idea, she says, it came back when Sri Aurobindo, around 40s after the Second World War, this idea came back again. But there were not much resources. There was also a thought of doing it in Hyderabad because the Nizam had given the place. But there was objection on one issue. And so finally it dropped. Then after Sri Aurobindo's physical stepping into the background, then she was too much into a hurry to bring the supramental down and prepare the sadhaks. So it went into the background. But after the supramental manifestations, she says the idea came up again. So somewhere around 65, she discusses the idea. And we know that 68, officially, Auroville opens. And for whom is Auroville? She, ashram is a very concentrated place. It doesn't appear because nobody wears any sannyasi dress and all that. So people can be very mistaken about it, looking at from the surface. They are looking for some bhajan, kirtan, some collective meditation, some pravachan people. If you live here, you will understand. Because there is no such thing here. Because it's between you and the divine. There is no rule, no priest, nothing. No puja, no external manifestation. But this is a tremendous pressure. We have already spoken about it. It's a very intense place. And unless one is ready to consecrate one's life fully and ready to go through any suffering, whatever it be. Mother has spoken about that. Any suffering, any trial. Because supramental consciousness is exacting to the detail. It doesn't operate in a human sense. Oh, poor fellow, okay, let me. So it's like now operating. It's truth. So it's bound to, you know. So she knew that everybody is not ready for it. So then there are people who are not ready for this intensity, but who are full of goodwill, who have an higher aspiration. They want humanity to progress. They want a space where people can live together in a higher kind of harmony. They have some kind of a conception about it. Not exactly in so many words, but they may or may not believe in the divine. It's perfectly fine. But they have an aspiration. Aspiration doesn't require a deity in whom you have to believe. They are not ready to surrender completely. But they are ready to work for a better world, new world. See, this idea had started pressing in 60s. So the mother created a space. That's what Auroville is for those who are who have the aspiration for something higher, but don't quite know what it is. So she used words like perfection, for progress. She used the word divine, but gave it a very different meaning altogether, or a more general meaning. With the ashram, now we can see here, with the ashram, she would say, it is Sri Aurobindo's ashram. It is Sri Aurobindo everywhere. Even when she signed the document, you must not forget that the ashram is the body of Sri Aurobindo. She has used this word. It's a subtle body of Sri Aurobindo because it's Sri Aurobindo ashram. But what is Auroville? She writes, who has taken the initiative for the construction of Auroville? The Supreme Lord. Who participates in the financing of Auroville? The Supreme Lord. If one wants to live in Auroville, what does it imply for oneself? To try to attain the supreme perfection. If you see, now she has opened it very wide. This is very concentrated, not easy. Yeah. But this is the ultimate, let's say, the seed and the final fruition. But Auroville, there are many people who would be better for that. Must one be a student of yoga in order to live in Auroville? She says, all life is yoga. Therefore, one cannot live without practicing the supreme yoga. First time you will hear, she is not using the word mother's yoga, integral yoga. Meaning thereby you should have the aspiration and the urge towards the perfection. That's it. She has said at one place, there are people in the ashram who are very advanced, but they themselves don't know. Shobhinda has also said, half a dozen people living in the Brahmic condition, but they don't know. They are having that experience. But they don't know means because they don't put a label or a name or a tag to it. So she speaks of that. So, what is Auroville? She describes, Auroville wants to be a universal town where men and women of all countries are able to live in peace and progressive harmony. Above all creeds, all politics and all nationalities. The purpose of Auroville is to realize human unity. Now you see, she says something very interesting. In the ashram, when people came, there was nothing like a family life. Even when husband and wife came, they were to come as individuals. It was not like tag along, one plus one free. And there is a practical reason also, because, well, wife is not ready for the yoga, she just comes. She will have her own demands, understandably, natural. And then they have a right to have a child. What happens to the child? Though she has made exceptions, which we have spoken about. But in the ashram, families were not allowed. You came as individuals. Husband and wife had to individually apply. And they would be admitted. There are instances where the man is admitted, the wife was not, like Dhumanbhai. And much later when his wife came and he asked the mother, she says, you can meet her only once and in my presence. They have not, it's not been easy the way they have gone. They've shown the way, the pioneers. And there is another instance where the student came, who came with a teacher, and the mother told them, both of you can stay in the same house. Because Panditji said, no, you cannot stay together. It's against the ashram and all. She said, please ask mother. Mother says, yes, both of you can live together. Vimalthai, she herself told me how, you know, things. So, this was a very, not an easy place. It's only when the students came that the door opened for families. So that's in the 40s. So basically from 26 to 36, 46, for good about 19, 20 years, there was nothing like a family. And later on also, it's not like family, you don't come to ashram as a family. This is something which, but you can come individually and live here. So she was asked, but for Auroville, will family life continue in Auroville? She says, if one has not gone beyond that. So she allows. See the difference. Okay, you can come with the family, you can live. And people, she used to send people to Auroville, those who wanted to have family and children. Can one retain one's religion is in Auroville if one has not gone beyond that? Can one be an atheist in Auroville if one has not gone beyond that? Look at the answers. You need to have goodwill. So what is important about Auroville? Will there be social life in Auroville if one has not gone beyond that? Will there be compulsory community activities in Auroville? Nothing is compulsory. This is a grand experiment. You cannot even imagine. We won't understand its implications till maybe another 100 years. Or maybe more than that. The experiment that she has started. Maybe a few 100 years. See, when Socrates was speaking of certain things, he was given hemlock. But much later, today you see that so many things, Socrates is everywhere actually. So it takes a long time for these kind of ideas to be realized. It will go through phases. So, what will be the relations between the inhabitants of Auroville and the outside world? In ashram, it was very, very strict in the beginning. It's only when the parents came that things started opening up. And then, of course, later on, with after 56, things have changed. Mother herself changed it. So the mother says, each person is allowed full freedom. The external relations of residents in Auroville will be established for each one according to his personal aspiration and his activities within Auroville. So you see, this is what she says. And, oh, this is something very interesting. Again, this applies here, there, everywhere. As long as you are for some and against others, you are necessarily outside the truth. And he says, Auroville is at the service of truth. There is truth everywhere in everything. You have to take out that truth. Even when you take a stand, it's not against someone and for someone. So it's not kind of, you know, like in the Mahabharata, Shri Krishna is on both sides. And yet he is on the chariot of Arjun. But there are many people who have joined the Pandavas because they have their own axe to grind. So the difference is so subtle. Because obviously in decision making, you will take a decision which is. But for and against applies in that sense. You should constantly keep goodwill and love in your heart and let them pour out on all with tranquility and equality. So somebody who has shouted at you comes to you. Ah, now see, he has come. He needs my help. I'll show him. That's not how the ashram and aura will work. Then we'll come to the charter, but because we are talking about ashram and aura will also. So there is a question which has been asked. Okay. What is the difference between the ashram and Auroville? This also people ask. Leaving aside the outer management and processes which have evolved because of this fundamental difference. The ashram will retain its true role of pioneer, inspirer and guide. And we may say, largely to for individuals to engage in a kind of Gnostic being, that evolution into Gnostic being. This she has said at different places. Auroville is an attempt. Auroville is the attempt towards collective realization. So it is, you know, the group life has to evolve, systems have to evolve, institutions have to evolve with plasticity toward the future. Again, she is, but there is no fundamental difference between the attitude toward the divine. What is the fundamental difference between the ideal of the ashram and the ideal of Auroville? She says there is no fundamental difference in the attitude toward the future and the service of the divine. This is expected. Servitors, collaborators, she has used this word. In ashram, there is complete self-giving. Service is not enough. 6-hour services are not enough. So service of the divine and the attitude toward the future is the same. So is there a difference? So she says, yes. But the people in the ashram are considered to have consecrated their lives to yoga. Except, of course, the students who are here only for their studies and who are not expected to have made their choice in life. So this is a place for complete consecration. It can't be there that I am working and after that I am a free being, I'll do whatever I feel like. Your heart, your mind, your every part has to consecrate. Whereas in Auroville, simply the goodwill to make a collective experiment for the progress of humanity is sufficient to gain admittance. You can go to, like, for admittance, it's much easier. Of course, you can rise to the same possibility of a Gnostic being. There is no bar that, you know, oh, Aurobindo will not be, will be denied this. No. Individually, one can be anywhere, and yet if there is sincerity, aspiration, surrender, that's the core of yoga. But primarily that the field, the purpose of the field is this. Otherwise, so yoga means complete consecration. This is the aim, nothing else. And otherwise one can be in the service of truth, service of the divine, which is a different thing. Now we have the famous charter. This charter Mother has elaborated at length, because she wrote the charter from that level and we understood it at this level, and that's always the case. We use all the divine utterances as excuses and justifications. So the charter is, there is no charter for ashram, there are no rules for ashram. It's understood, if you are here, you have, in the trust deed, there is only one thing which is mentioned. Conditions for being in the ashram. This ashram is meant for those who have faith in the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. That's the end of the story. You have faith that in Sri Aurobindo, very clearly is there. The trust deed, the only, this ashram is meant for those. So you have to define what is the purpose. So the purpose is those who have faith in the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and are willing to take up the yoga. The full sentence I don't remember, but the first part is about the faith, and then of course the yoga part is there, but exact words. So it is meant for that. So who is Auroville meant for? So what is the charter of Auroville? Charter is, Auroville belongs to nobody in particular. Auroville belongs to humanity as a whole. So you know what happened? People started saying, doesn't matter, it belongs to nobody. Neither to ashram, nor to society, nobody. That's the whole, where the seed started. It doesn't belong to Mother and Sri Aurobindo. You see Bhasmasur's story. Bhasmasur's story is where Shiva gave him a boon. You can burn down anything by putting your hand, because it'll turn to ashes. Because he said, I want to bring ashes for you. This is my service to you. You use ashes. So he says, okay. So I want to make it easy, simple. So wherever I put my hand, ashes will be there, and then I'll bring to you. He says, granted. Then what this fellow does? See, this is how, this is a classic story of how human understanding can corrupt a greatest boon. So Bhasmasur says, okay, then after some time he says, why not burn down Shiva? Because I can marry Parvati. Parvati is a real Shakti. Shiva is only meditating. He understood, that fellow understood one thing, that Parvati Mata is a Shakti. Without Parvati, he is nothing. Without Parvati, Shiva is Shava. So he says, okay, let me burn down the old fellow and marry Parvati. With this capacity, and then we know that Vishnu Bhagwan intervened and he adopted the most beautiful form ever upon earth, Mohini. It's one of the avatars of Vishnu. In Bhagavad Puran we have it, Mohini avatar, from where it has come, Mohini Attam, the famous dance. And he becomes a woman whom the world desires, and Bhasmasur also desires. He says, we'll think about Parvati chapter later. Here is someone. And she entices him. And he's lured, and she says, but there is only one condition. You have to keep up with my steps in the dance. He says, okay. You dance, I will follow you. So she dances and Bhasmasur dances. And then one of the steps is where Vishnu turned Mohini, puts his hand over her head. So this fool, blinded by passion, does the same movement. So the boon follows and he turns to ashes. Because wherever he places the hand, that will become ashes. So some people that belongs to nobody took it that it doesn't belong to Mother and Sri Aurobindo, it doesn't belong to divine. Now, this cannot be by default. It's inbuilt in creation. And Sri Aurobindo describes it at great length in several places. He says, you can be distinct to any extent, but the moment you say, I am separate, it's not there. It's like this option is invalid. If you do that, you will be destroying, because there is nothing like separate. Ego will make you feel you are separate, but this is not the truth of things. There is interconnectedness. So when she says it belongs to nobody in particular, humanity as a whole, Because this problem actually took place in the beginning. So people came and said, where Mother and Sri Aurobindo? Nothing. It's because, you know, it's humanity. We are human beings. We have a right to it. Whatever we want to do, it's fine. Logical. Human beings are very logical. That's the problem. Then she had to add something. So she says, but to live in Auroville, one must be the willing servitor of the divine consciousness. This is an addition. First, see, the charter itself evolved before it was finally given. And there's a whole discussion over it. She says that, you know, they say that, well, we'll do whatever we feel like because we are human beings and it belongs to all of us. Imagine what a mess it would be. She says, but, this is a but. You have to be a willing servitor, not just servitor. You can't just say, okay, he will serve the divine. Willing servitor of the divine consciousness. Second is, Auroville will be the place of an unending education, of constant progress, and a youth that never ages, which is beautiful. So we have, for the manifestation purposes, Auroville has been created for all kinds of different experimental modes. Some will stay, some will evolve, some will not evolve. It's like humanity in a small place has been brought together for a grand experiment. She has also said that Auroville is to prevent the Third World War. And my own feeling is, I have shared it earlier also, the discords in Auroville opened the gates to discord all over the world. And extreme degree of autocracy that you see happening. Because Auroville, whatever happens in Auroville will get reflected in the world. This is what she has said. I am simply applying that logic. So if people in Auroville live by discord and disunity of imposing things, strict authoritarianism, it will just start getting into the world. The discord here will... Earlier it was ashram, whatever is happening. Now she has created a front, like Auroville is the, it's like the shield of the world. That's also, one can look at it, the society and the Auroville were shields. They took the brunt of the world. That is also true. And the ashram was like a shielded place. Still it is shielded. She speaks of that, but that's a different subject altogether. So, but in Auroville, the discords will get reflected. So if we are really concerned about the world, we should once again recover the lost unity by whatever means. The means are all there. Center the life around Mother and none else. You see, things will go. Get back to the original teachings of the Mother and Sri Aurobindo. This is the solution for everything actually. See, you see, Sikh started so beautifully. The movement, Sri Aurobindo says, it was the first attempt to create a spiritualized society, which is about the, you know, Sikh cult. Later on it became a cult. But why it has become what it has become today, itself a threat and a menace in certain ways. Because people lost the teaching. So people often ask, what is the way? I said, they should get back to the teaching. There is no other way. So in Auroville, they have to get back to the teaching. You can't abandon Mother Sri Aurobindo and ashram and say, we'll all do the experiment whichever way we want. Well, you are allowed in a sense that you can blow up the world. Nobody, you know, there is the freedom to do that. But if you really want to rectify things, keep Mother and Sri Aurobindo in the center and bring back the teachings. This is the way. So it's all implicit. Third, Auroville wants to be the bridge between the past and the future. This is a very, very tricky thing. Because when we go to past, we have to distinguish between that which is eternal and that which is antique. And Sri Aurobindo speaks of it in Bangla writings. Sri Aurobindo faced a lot of opposition, by the way, because of this. He said, some people think that I am not in favor of the past, I'm against the past. Then it, so they believe I'm against Sanatan Dharma. Then it distinguishes. Sanatan Dharma is the base. It is eternal. What was, is, and forever will be. But when he refers to past, he is speaking of the forms it took. The physical yajna. Sometime back I remember someone was just sharing that, you know, we are planning that in Auroville we'll have some kind of a yajna and the Vedas. So I couldn't help saying, I said, whole of Auroville is a yajna vedi. You don't have to have separate yajnas, because the whole idea is to change. The form has to be different. You don't start doing the external yajna, havan and all that. That's okay. That was relevant at one point of time. Humanity has evolved. It better evolve. If it still needs to do the external ceremony to connect within, then it's far away. I mean, there are people who want to do it, have a right to do it. But the idea of yajna, even once with, there was a, I think, some play on Savitri, and I had also gone to see. So there were suddenly some rishis, and the rishis, typical traditional rishis, who, you know, there was some mantras going on, fire is lit. Now that's not the, even Shri Krishna says the fire is inside and the yajna is within you. Purifying, refining your energies, that's the yajna, by dedicating them to the divine. So there is the past form it took, now there is the future form. Future form is where, as Sri Aurobindo says, in Satyug, people speak about the age of truth, divine will come as the yajna purusha, very beautifully. And he will be seated, he is always in the heart. Where will be the yajna purusha take his seat? In the heart of each creature. So in Treta, he is in the king. In Dwapar, he is in the Shastras and collectivity. In Kaliyug, everything breaks down. I will talk about it in the Bhagavad Puran. But in Satyug, he once again takes his seat in the heart of everyone. So this is the yajna, which have to be awakened. So this is a new form. Past form is external. King, authority, that person is embodying the truth. No. Everybody has to embody the truth, however difficult it may be. Without it, that's why we see anarchy is coming. Now somebody has started a ball rolling. We may not like it, but it will go towards anarchy, which is okay, because there are many suppressed things, all kinds of fight, battle is fine. Even humanity has to move towards a point where it realizes itself from within the need for change. And divine will do it. He knows his way. He, you know, so taking advantage of all discoveries from without and from within. So whatever has happened so far and new discoveries which will be made. Auroville will boldly spring towards future realization. So one of the classic example was the need of physical education in the ashram, and many people couldn't understand. And then Sri Aurobindo to write the letters. Now this is toward the future. Your body has to participate. It cannot participate only by ritual acts of puja. It has to participate by becoming an instrument of the divine to hold that power. Similarly, once during the collective meditation, there was a song which was played. A French song. People thought, complained to the mother, what has happened, what a degeneration, they are playing, you know. It was a, they felt it's a, like a, you know, kind of quasi-romantic song. And mother explained what was the song, then she heard. Then she said, no, no, it is when the soldiers are going to the war front. It is the women who are saying them goodbye, and you know, it's a song which inspires you to valor and courage. Like we had that in one of the days the band played for a change. I'm forgetting, was it last year? In one of the darshan days, the ashram band had played "Ae Mere Watan Ke Logo Jara Aankh Mein Bhar Lo Pani." It was such a welcome change. So we have that still. Because it's about things which are very beautiful. They are divine, but they don't use the word divine. I mean, Socrates never used the word divine. It spoke about the inner demon. But if you look at him, Sri Aurobindo himself was most likely one of his past. That's what Amal Kiran writes, that he was Plato and Sri Aurobindo was possibly Socrates. So, and then finally, four, Auroville will be a site of material and spiritual researches for a living embodiment of an actual human unity. See, sometimes the stress on a word changes the whole thing. Not embodiment of human unity. Actual human unity is only that which is springs from within. It is possible only when one lives in the sense that all is the divine. that the divine dwells in all. Any other way, unity by creating a bonhomie, by, you know, programs together, all that is okay. Cultural programs and different programs. Unless this changes and you begin to feel that the divine dwells in everyone, there can be no real brotherhood. And brotherhood is the most challenging thing for human beings. And human beings have tried it religious way, other ways, but it doesn't work. Because the only way is to know that the divine dwells in all. So this is a charter of Auroville. And whoever has to come, she knows. She emphasized on discipline in both ashram and Auroville, because nothing can be done without discipline, but it should be from within. It's not something with a stick you impose. If one needs stick to impose discipline, one is not ready for spiritual life. Basically, it's as simple as that. So he says, all those who wish to live and work at Auroville must have an integral goodwill, a constant aspiration to know that truth and to submit to it. Enough plasticity to confront the exigencies of work and an endless will to progress so as to move forward toward the ultimate truth. And finally, a word of advice with which we can close, because this advice is so useful for all of us, always. And finally, a word of advice, be more concerned with your own faults than with those of others. I think it's just this, if we follow, such a beautiful, refreshing advice. If each one worked seriously at his own self-perfection, the perfection of the whole would follow automatically. This is what she says in 1957 also. That if each one did his best, then the whole will progress. But if you think by fault finding, correcting others, then lead to more and more discord, disunity. I think if somebody who has lived 30 years or 25 years, understand, nobody listens to anyone and nobody changes because someone else is saying, asking you to change. You may change external ways, but inwardly there can never be any change which is imposed from outside. That's one understands. And if one doesn't understand it, then one is just fooling oneself. Change has to come from inside. Inner change always comes by a progress and growth. Jai Ma.